You shut your mouth. I'll come out there and slap the syphilis right off your face.
It's my message to all of you. You know, speaking of that return, my guy, Ben Conti, at FatPoet10, who's always great, suggested, or he said, he thinks I've got the two best nicknames, as you call me for no good reason whatsoever, Mr. Steal Your Girl. I have stolen no girls. And you won't explain yourself. What's my other nickname? Oh, that he loved. And not Rooster, of course. No. Not the one that I actually like. He likes Big Sexy. So he thinks I've got the two coolest nicknames in radio. And then, you know, I said, it was all part of the show, whatever. And he said something about how I give you authority on the bounce backs. And that's your personality. That's your input shining through. So I'm pretty sure that was a compliment. Mm. He likes your musical choices. I don't. Yeah. He does.
Nah, I mean, you're not really a musical guy, though, are you?
I am a musical guy. Okay. I like was born before you.
Yeah, I was going to say, just very specific in your taste.
Man. All right. Anyway, let's continue along. So we stumbled into this Mount Rushmore for the Washington NFL franchise. I expanded it to coaches and GMs to allow Joe Gibbs, Bobby Bethard, I guess if you want somebody else or whatever. Again, it's really hard, really hard. Impossible to pick four definitive players on a franchise that's won three Super Bowl championships, been to a fourth, has been around for 95 plus years. I mean, it's really, 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 really hard. So there's no wrong answers. But give us yours. 301-230-0980. 301-230-0980. Total Pro Sports, who I got this from, went Daryl Green, Sammy Ball, Art Monk, and Russ Grimm. I had John Riggins on my initial list. I'm certainly open to discussion about that. And I had left the fourth open for the purposes of discussion. One thing I will say is anybody that just is going to pick Jaden Daniels, can we give it more than 1 year? I mean, he's great. And he's the reason for hope. Can we give it more than 1 year?
I love it. I'm sorry, just real quick. I love it when you're like rational Rooster. There's like irrational Rooster, which I'm not a fan of.
Uh-huh.
Like LeBron runs the league,
right,
Rooster.
Right, right. Yeah, you don't like when I'm ripping on your buddy Rich Ball.
No, I'm whatever. But there's this rational side that I am very endearing towards. So thank you for that.
Hey, you're welcome. I'm glad that you are endeared. I'm glad that you're happy. That means the world to me. That makes my day. When I go home tonight, I'm going to think, you know what? When I'm sitting out under the stars, you know what? I made AMAC happy today. That means so much to me.
I bet Tyler cares. I feel like Ty Guy would be like...
Ty Guy does care about you.
Yeah, I genuinely...
He was very disappointed when I told him he was not going to see you today.
Yeah, I enjoy when Ty Guy comes through. Yeah. I like how he ends the day with you.
Yeah.
That's probably the favorite part of my day.
Yeah. Maybe he'll be here tomorrow.
Yeah, man, I think...
You're working tomorrow, right?
Yes,
I just want to make sure that you weren't taking a four-day weekend. Okay? Just want to make sure. 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. Let's get back to it on the phones. Let's go to line four, I guess we'll start off. Julius in D.C. Julius, thanks for hanging in there. How are you?
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for making it.
Yeah, man, I'm one of the top... Commander / Redskins fans in the world. And I wanted to add Charlie Taylor. Charlie Taylor was a beast back in the 70s. Also, I want to give out shout out to my redhead, Sonny Jurgensen. He should be up there on the Mount Rushmore along with Charlie Taylor.
You know, it's interesting. I thought about Charlie Taylor and I'll let you finish up. I thought about Charlie Taylor and I didn't put him on my list, and I don't know why. I don't have a good answer for you. And as far as Sonny, I love Sonny. I mean, I got to work with him, you know, on the same radio broadcast for 5 years. I love Sonny Jurgensen. Yeah. He treated me great. So I'm always willing to take that under consideration, and the same for the late great Sam Huff too.
Yeah. There you go. There you go.
All right. There you go. I appreciate the phone call, Julius. Thank you. I mean, again, it's impossible. Let's start by acknowledging. Yeah. A-Mac, you're a Giants fan. Like, yeah. Who's on the Mount Rushmore of Giants all time? Clearly, it starts with Lawrence Taylor.
Yeah.
Then what?
Yeah, I for me personally, I would go Eli. I was just talking about
you would this. Put Eli on the top four of the Giants' entire history.
Yeah, I think just talking or reacting to what someone else was saying earlier about it depends on your age. Like,
right.
I was there seeing both of Eli's Super Bowl wins.
Yeah.
So that, you know, etches. Michael Strahan is also up there.
I mean, I think Strahan you got to probably put on that list.
Yeah.
I would put Parcells on that list.
Okay. We're
including again, expanding
coaches.
It beyond players.
Yeah, right. We're including coaches.
I mean, would I put Eli?
I don't know if I would put Eli ahead of Tom Coughlin if we're including coaches.
I mean, Eli is going to get the consideration, and I understand quarterback, more modern, won two Super Bowls. But because he wasn't great during the regular seasons, I wonder if that kind of – I mean, there are a lot of people that don't think Eli Manning should be in the Hall of Fame, and he will be in the Hall of Fame. There is no doubt in my mind.
Yeah, I think he's not a first ballot Hall of Famer.
That's possible. But Eli Manning will get into the Hall of Fame because of what he did when it mattered the most.
Yeah, I mean, as a Giants fan, like, Eli was – there was times you were looking around like, what are you looking at? What are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, and that was very flip-flop, but.
But it's hard because then you have to also consider, as we did with Sammy Baugh, all of the guys that nobody knows anything. Like, Frank Gifford was one of the – people know Frank Gifford maybe from Monday Night Football. They don't know him from his football career.
But, like, so just taking this in
– wasn't Y.A. Tittle – a Giant?
Yeah.
I think.
Just applying this back to the Giant or to the Commanders. So, like, you were saying, like, when I said Eli Manning, you were saying, you would have Eli Manning on this? Like, do you think that for younger people or for people of just different generations in general, can you understand if their list just holds people within the last 20 years or – I mean, the Commanders haven't won any Super Bowls in 20 years, so I know it's kind of like different for Commanders fans. But
that's a hit and run if I
– No. But can you understand just like, okay, recent success, especially with Jaden Daniels here now? Like,
So, again, it depends on how you qualify. Mm-hmm. Like, we've had several callers call up and say, look, Chris, I've never seen Sammy Baugh. How can I put him on a list? The same thing for me. I've never seen Sammy Baugh play outside of highlights, outside of reading, outside of like legacy stuff. But I never saw Babe Ruth play. I never saw Mickey Mantle play. Mm-hmm. I never saw Willie Mays play. I did in an old timers game, but we have to, I think, expand sometimes what we saw, what we didn't. But if you want to qualify and say, listen, I understand that there are guys, great guys, legacy guys that I never saw. But out of the guys that I saw, I'm going to go here. That's fine, too.
What about if you hear names like Santana Moss, Champ Bailey, or Clinton Portis? Because those are people that I remember having to play against that I had a headache.
I mean, I put Santana and Champ on the list. I did not put Clinton Portis on the list just as a potential consideration. And obviously, I put Trent Williams. I put Terry McLaurin just to try and color it up a little bit. I think you can put a lot of names on any list, but are they truly, truly, truly deserving? Truly deserving. And the answer for me when we're doing such a limited list, top four, is I can't put, I mean, as much as I love Santana, London, even Champ Bailey. Champ Bailey was here for what, 4 years, 5 years, whatever it was? I can't do that. For me. That's me. But everybody's criteria is a little bit different. I'm not giving a set criteria, and I know that often leads to, and I even expanded the criteria for Gibbs and Bobby Bethard, right? Which, I mean, you might not even know the name Bobby Bethard, right?
No.
I mean, he's a Hall of Fame executive that built their Super Bowl teams.
Yeah, no, I mean,
you know the name Joe Gibbs, of course.
Yeah.
But, you know, so everything's kind of subject to
the race car driver. He owned race cars.
He's not a race car driver. He owns Joe Gibbs Racing.
Yeah, he owned that. Yeah.
Let's get to AA, Athens and Annapolis on line one. What's up, AA? How are you?
Good. You said two words, truly deserving. Well, in my eyes, and again, my opinion is different from people's, but you said truly deserving is Rick Doc Walker, because of not only what he did as a hog on the field, because he opened those holes for Riggins and what have you, but what he's done off the field as a member of this community for 45 years. He used to call the games on the sidelines, and he should still be there on Sundays. He has called Georgetown and, you know, Maryland, been a part of that, and the Caps and the Nats and everything. You know, Nats came here and big part of it, just this community as a mentor and to current and former players. It just an overall body of work for nearly 50 years. I don't know any other player who has been in this community that long other than him and has been so involved, not just as a player, but just as everything that he has added to his full body of work, which to me is a masterpiece. It's like a Picasso. It's like a million-dollar painting that can't be replaced. So I know everybody else is going to go off of stats and everything, but there is a person that works there that is truly deserving to be at least on my Mount Rushmore, and he deserves to be in the Redskins Ring of Honor along with Mark May.
I know this. There is no greater champion of support of Rick Doc Walker than you. So that's not surprising by any means, and I know it's genuine, and I know it's sincere, and I love Doc. You know, I from a football only perspective, and I guess from a on the football field or at least coaching or building a football roster, though, I think kindly we would say there are others that had a bigger impact. But when you talk about, you know, what do you call it, zooming out and talking about the community impact, and still the community impact. I mean, Doc goes to these charity events that the team asks him to do, and he's still one of the most popular guys of all time. And he's still a legend on the radio, no matter what his role is.
And Chris, I'll just throw one other in there, Dave Butts, because nobody ran up the middle on Washington when Dave Butts was in the middle. I think that's somebody that gets overlooked, but just holler out to the DOC because, like I said, I look at the overall grand scheme of somebody's body of work, and just like belong in the Radio Hall of Fame, he belongs in the Skins Hall of Fame.
Oh, thank you, pal. I appreciate that. And, Doc, I'm sure I'll pass that along to him as well. Thank you, as always, AA. I don't know if I belong in the Radio Hall of Fame. I would imagine the last place you'll find me is in the Radio Hall of Fame. I mean, that ain't happening.
If you go, does that mean I go? Because if so, I need you to talk more highly of yourself right now.
I mean, guy, you've been here for 2 months.
I mean, I'm part of the process. That's like the guy who got coffee and gets like a Grammy Award or something.
Right. I mean, or it's like when somebody wins Best Supporting Actor and you've never heard of the movie or something like that, right?
Yeah.
How about this? One day, I hope one day I get inducted into the DC Sports Hall of Fame. How about that? I mean, that's a reasonable goal, right?
Just don't forget about me on your come up.
I mean, I've been toiling in my craft here locally exclusively for 16 years.
Mm-hmm.
Many years before that, overall in radio, have done national, local, have been on the DC airwaves basically since 2002. At some point, I would love to be considered for that. I'm not saying I deserve it over anybody else. I mean, there are much more deserving figures just that I know and I've worked with. You know, your John Kimes, Ben Standig, guys like that. And certainly, because it's a sports Hall of Fame, it's a little bit different. And because so many people move around, we don't have the legendary longtime figures that we once used to have. But a guy like Barry Sferluga deserves that honor. But at some point, yeah. I mean, I would be thrilled by that. That would be cool. All right, let's get to Greg and Alexandria. Then we'll take the break late and reset after that. What's up, Greg? How are you?
Pretty good.
What's going on?
I think one of the previous callers hit on my four, or three of my four. Sonny Jurgensen, the 1965 year was iconic. He finished as the leading passer. His receivers finished 1, 2, and 4 with Charlie Taylor. Jerry Smith was second, and Bobby Mitchell was fourth. So it's Jurgensen, Taylor, Darryl Green, and Art Monk.
I mean, it's hard to argue with that. Now, you're not putting Sammy Ball on because you didn't see him, I assume?
No, he just got out of town before I became the paper boy in my neighborhood.
I got you. What about anybody more? Yeah. Did you have a problem when I mentioned John Riggins? A couple of callers said Dexter Manley. Did you have any issue with that?
Well, only because their longevity doesn't match the other four that I've mentioned.
Right.
Taylor finished as the all-time leading pass receiver in the NFL when he retired.
Right.
And then Monk also finished as the all-time leading pass receiver
when he retired.
And like I said, Jurgensen won the passing title at least 3, maybe 4 times.
What's interesting about Sonny is I think playing in Philadelphia for the first part of his career hurts a little bit of his association with the Redskins or Washington NFL franchise, but his broadcasting excellence and being a part of that trio of Sonny, Sam, and Frank, or Frank, Sonny, and Sam, whatever, makes almost like what AA was talking about with Doc Walker's influence and contributions in a different way, right? So again, it just kind of depends on your perspective and how you kind of shape things in your mind. But I'm not going to argue with anybody against Sonny Jurgensen. Now, some of the numbers, again, were a little bit way different than what they are now. And of course, it's a way different game. But yeah, I appreciate the phone call. Thank you, Greg. Good to hear from you. And thanks for hopping in. All right, we'll come back. We'll take a break right here. We'll get back on schedule. The Nationals are still going at it over at Nationals Park, game one of a day-night doubleheader. It's not going well. We will fill you in on everything else going on in the world of sports next on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Rooster! Okay!
All right, so something that AMAC sent me the other day is what we wanted to touch on here in the final half an hour or so of the show. So Sauce Gardner of the New York Jets and Deion Sanders got together on Twitter, on social media, on X, in response to something that was going on Monday, where Adam Schefter tweeted, the highest paid pass rushers in the NFL on a per year basis enlisted Myles Garrett, $40 million, Max Crosby, $35.5 million, Nick Bosa, $34 million, Josh Hines Allen at 28.25 and Brian Burns at 28.2. And Sauce Gardner said, retweeted it or tagged it
He retweeted. Well, he asked a question about, because I think this was after.
No, I have the question, but what is that term on Twitter?
Oh, yeah, retweet.
Is it retweet?
Yeah, retweet.
I thought retweet is.
He quote tweeted.
Yeah. That's what I was looking for.
Yeah.
So you saw this. So you sent this to me. So Sauce Gardner's coming from his official account, whatever that matters. He said, can somebody educate me on why the cornerback market is significantly lower than D end and wide receiver? To which Deion Sanders, Coach Prime, weighed in and said, because the dog corners need stand up for themselves and what they bring to the table, or sit down and watch what's happening happen. Y'all need to stand up, stand out, and believe in what you possess. So that's what Deion Sanders said. So basically saying, you know, some of it is wide receivers and essentially pass rushers not being divas necessarily, although wide receivers in a lot of ways are considered divas, but pass rushers are considered like dogs, man, animals, you know, just like a pack of wolves kind of thing. And I wanted to look up just some of the things that come along with like numbers and salary and all that stuff. Because I do think it's kind of important, right? Like Derek Stingley just got a new contract over this offseason. He's making an average of $30 million a year. J.C. Horn just got a contract extension recently. He's only 26. He's making an average of $25 million per year. Jalen Ramsey just got traded. Now he got a sweetener, so I think he's making more than J.C. Horn, but yeah, it's basically
26.
Like,
I think it's 26.
Yeah, it's almost 26, right? Yeah. So clearly the corners, the average per year cornerback market is, no doubt about it, lower than wide receivers, as we've talked about many times, and DN slash edge. There is no doubt about that. And Deion's basically saying, you've got to let yourself be known. You've got to shine. You've got to be special. You've got to be like a sizzling steak, basically. Like, in other words, like he was. Where Deion was a great cover corner, not a great run defender, not a great tackler, not a big pass rusher, obviously. But a great cover corner. Sometimes teams didn't even throw near him. But when they did, he capitalized on the mistakes. And, oh, by the way, he was a showman. He was a showboater. And he was polarizing and controversial and everything. And that's what raised his profile. And his point, I suppose, is, hey, man, when you're that, you're going to make money. You're going to make more money than, say, Derek Stingley is about to make, granted, which is a nice paycheck, $30 million a year on a three-year, $90 million deal. Okay? At least that's how I'm interpreting Deion Sanders' comments, right? And, like, let's look at it from this perspective, right? If you look at where Sauce Gardner is on this list.
He's still on his rookie deal, though.
Yeah,
right?
I think he's still on his rookie deal, right?
Yeah,
he's not on this list. So he's in all likelihood, he's going to be the next one to get the next big contract. Oh, well, Patrick Surtain is getting paid $24 million. He already did his first extension to his deal. But Gardner, trying to find his actual
his rookie contract deal?
Yeah. Let me see here. I got it right here. He's a unrestricted free agent in 2027. So 2022, 2023, 2024. So he's 3 years into his career. So the Jets have the fifth year option, which obviously they'll pick up. And then they have a franchise tag option, which could further keep him from the market. But you would presume he's going to get an extension sometime in the next 2 years. Now, he didn't have the greatest of years last year, by no means. But you would, I would expect Sauce Gardner is probably going to, he's probably going to make more than $30 million per year. So the question becomes,
you think he's definitely going to get more than Derek Stingley?
I don't know if definite, but I think probably a good chance, especially under Aaron Glenn, if he bounces back this year and that defense shines while it's working its way out for the all. I mean, listen, all it takes is one really good year, and it doesn't take a great 3 or 4 year stretch. One great year at the right time, 2 years away from free agency, smart teams then start getting worried about, oh, wait a second, I'm going to have to play the franchise tag game. There's going to be acrimony, what have you. I'm going to give him what the market dictates, what his talent dictates, what we think, will somehow come to a compromise. And I would presume it would be right around that neighborhood, but maybe it would be slightly more, slightly less. I don't know enough about the situation directly to say for sure. But it would be somewhere around that. But I guess, again, the point being is, why do corners make pretty much significantly less than defensive end slash pass rushers or edge and or wide receivers? And we know how running backs have been over the many years been marginalized and devalued and so on and so forth. And maybe a little bit of it is coming back with the huge years from Saquon and Derrick Henry. And Bijan Robinson is going to obviously get a lot of money. But why is it for corners? Why are they not valued as much as, again, pass rushers or wide receivers? I think I have the answer. I want to mention it on the other side. We'll get AMAC's answer as well, being that he came up with this particular issue or topic or exchange between Dion and Sauce Gardner. We'll do that after the trending alert right here, right now on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. All right, we continue along on this Wednesday afternoon. The Nationals just getting drubbed at Nationals Park. First of two on the day by the Detroit Tigers. They'll play at 6:45 tonight. The current game is 11-2. Detroit in the bottom of the seventh inning. They scored six runs in the top of the first. Did the Tigers to put some pressure on Trevor Williams, who did make it through the first, but didn't last much longer than that. Speaking of the Tigers, Kerry Carpenter is going to be out. They're a star outfielder on the 10-day IL with a right hamstring strain. 16 home runs, 32 RBI, 257 average, and certainly was a all-star break contender. He will not return before the Midsummer Classic for the Tigers, so the Nationals maybe catch a little bit of a break. Elsewhere, Major League Baseball, San Diego doubling up Philadelphia 6-3 at the end of 8. Milwaukee now hammering the woeful, mostly, Mets 7-2 in the 9th, and Tampa Bay held on and beat the Athletics 6-5. Pittsburgh shut out St. Louis 5-0. Meanwhile, Mike Brown is getting the Knicks job. Two-time NBA head coach of the year, including most recently 2023 in Sacramento, was fired by the Kings in 2024. He is going to take over the Knicks head coaching job for Tom Thibodeau. And the NBA has adjusted Greg Popovich's career record, crediting Mitch Johnson, who took over on an interim basis with games from this past year, meaning 24-25. They removed the 77 games that he missed, did Pop, and credited those wins and losses to Mitch Johnson. So it appears that Popovich's final record is 1,390-824. And that's what's trending.
Let me ask you a question, Rooster. You like to tussle?
Oh, I like to tussle. I like to turn on my mic early, too. So here's the reason why I think corners are financially devalued compared to edge pass rushers and wide receivers, as Deion Sanders and Sauce Gardner were kind of bantering about. And AMAC, you found this, so I want to give you a chance to weigh in. But the reason why is because it is absolutely quantifiably harder to measure a corner's impact outside of interceptions than it is a wide receiver, catches, targets, touchdowns, yards, yards after the catch, and the highlight moves and catches that you see all over the place in a league that only cares really about scoring points. On top of that, edge pass rushers, right? What is most synonymous with an edge pass rusher or a defensive end that makes the kind of money that, you know, the Bosas make, that Myles Garrett makes, that Max Crosby makes, that Trey Hendrickson is trying to make, so on and so forth. The thing that is most synonymous is
sacks.
Yeah. So sacks, and then all of the big plays that stand out from a wide receiver's perspective, again, whether it's targets, catches, type of catches, highlight touchdowns, yards after the catch, broken tackles, all that stuff, that stands out way more than a corner where it is harder for them to say, okay, I'm going to do like what Xavier McKinney did for Green Bay last year. What did he finish up with? 9 interceptions or whatever it was?
9.
As a safety.
Mm-hmm.
Another good move by the Giants. It is harder to have that kind of impact, right? You are measured in different ways. Deion, again, didn't always get measured in just pure highlights and just pure raw numbers. You had to look at, okay, did they even throw at his, never mind at him, at his half of the field? And I remember when I was much younger and before a lot of the analytical data and all the different things that we have, is people like Pat Summerall and John Madden would talk about the impact that he would have. Not only, again, nobody would throw at him, but nobody would throw on his half of the field or his side or one third of the field or whatever the case might be. But that is harder to measure as a corner than it is an edge pass rusher and or a wide receiver. Does that seem fair?
Yeah, I think 100% it seems fair. And I would go further into it and break down the analysis. Like, if as a corner, I think your job, if you're the best corner, I think your job is to take out the toughest wide receiver. You made the point of Deion Sanders. Now, personally, Deion is like a highlight reel, but I never thought of him as like a man-to-man shutdown corner, as so like a Darrell Revis who for 2 years no one could catch a ball on. But I think when I think of corners, I think of a Darrell Revis where he's going to line up on your best receiver. He's going to take him out of the game. Like if he caught 5 passes, he was lucky. And on top of that, he was making 4 or 5 interceptions a year.
Right.
I think 2 things are happening. I think wide receivers are just quicker, faster, better route runners. So it is impossible, as well as coaches are doing a great job of scheming them up. Let's put them in the slot. Let's motion them. Let's do all these things to make sure we're getting wide receivers open. So playing man-to-man against receivers nowadays is impossible. Like, I don't know anyone who can do it outside of Patrick Surtain. I think that's the only person that I've seen do it on a consistent basis. Haven't watched too much of J.C. Horn, but all the other corners that we've named have struggled in man-to-man against top receivers at time, as well as they're not making interceptions, which is the biggest thing.
I mean, to your point, right? Not only is it hard to play man-to-man, but it's also easier for a quarterback to read man versus zone.
Yes.
Especially a young quarterback.
Yes. If I have good timing, the idea is I can beat man-to-man. Because even if I'm on your hip, you don't know when to expect the ball, when the break is happening. Yeah. So you're always reacting.
So is the cornerback position devalued, in your opinion, like the running back position? Because I don't think it is.
No.
I don't think it's that. I just think it's not as valued as not the higher end skill positions, but the positions that it's easier to see the impact.
Yeah, I think playing corner is still a more specific skill than playing running back.
Mm-hmm.
Like Derek Stingley, hit the drop off between Derek Stingley and the worst starting corner is far greater than the drop off between Saquon Barkley and the worst starting running back.
Right. Right.
So I think that's why it's not to the point of a running back, but I still think, like, if you have the best, like, if we pull up Patrick Surtain's stats, yes, he can probably make it difficult for a wide receiver to get open, but a good offensive coordinator is going to find a way to get Jamar Chase the ball. A good offensive coordinator is going to find a way to get Justin Jefferson the ball. And if we look at Patrick Surtain's stats, I don't think he's getting more than 5 or 6 interceptions a year. So it's just, you made the point. Like the best edge rushers, they're getting 10 plus sacks a year.
Yeah.
The best wide receivers, they're scoring 13, 14 touchdowns a year. So
I mean,
you look at
what's the name? Jamar Chase in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
He had 17 touchdowns last year.
Yeah. There's no way.
But Terry was second, and he had 13.
Yeah, and there's no way you're going to find a cornerback that can have an impact on the game like that.
Deion Sanders, just like using a couple of numbers, and this is from Pro Football Reference, in his career, year by year, had 5 interceptions as a rookie. That's 1989 with Atlanta. Then 3 interceptions, then 6 interceptions, then 3, then 7, then 6, then 2. So let me see. 3 straight years of 2, then back up to 5, then down to 3, then 4. Then he retired. Then he came back with Baltimore and had a total of 5 more over the last 2 years of his career.
Is this because I said Deion, I don't think he's a great man-to-man corner? Well, is that why you brought that up?
No, I think Deion, I think the league probably played more man when Deion was in his prime, mm-hmm. and was around. So I think Deion, I mean, I can't remember exactly what the percentage breakdown was, but Deion played man.
I'm not saying he didn't, but right. My point is I look at like Trayvon Diggs. Like Trayvon Diggs is a great playmaking corner where, yes, people don't pass the ball on Trayvon Diggs at times, but it's more so because they know not only can he make an interception, but he can make an interception and mm-hmm. take it to make a touchdown out of it, make it a 60-yard, you know, net gain for the defense.
Mm.
Whereas if I look at Darrell Revis, people aren't throwing them the ball because wide receivers wouldn't catch it. Deion wasn't that guy. And I remember looking at highlights and looking at film and watching Deion just play terribly technique-wise, like from his stance to his break, but he's just a great freak. I'm not trying to trash Deion, by
no,
the way.
No, no,
I don't.
Absolutely
Deion
not.
Is probably the greatest corner ever to play the game, but I'm just saying from a man-to-man perspective, he wasn't playing great technique. He was just a freak athlete. He read defenses very well and made plays like no other corner has made. If Deion was to play today, he would be the highest paid corner, deservingly so. But he just wasn't, man to man wasn't his forte.
Right. Okay. That's fair. All right. We got to take a timeout because we have to come back for Dumb Dumb of the Day because we have to get to Greg Hoffman on time. He's coming up at 4 o'clock on the Team 980, always live and free on the Odyssey app. And again, now we're available on iHeartRadio all sorts of TuneIn and all sorts of different apps. Wherever you get your podcasts, you can listen to the show live or on demand every show, every day, every hour, every segment, everywhere, baby, on the Team 980. As we wrap things up here on a Wednesday afternoon, 4th of July week, many people are on vacation. Many people are celebrating the independence of America. All the good things that you normally associate with July 4th, right? Some people, unfortunately, do, well, other things with the American flag, like light them on fire. Meet, as the story goes on the smoking gun, Brianna Laird, a 21-year-old Iowa woman who police found, well, they found her burning stolen American flags naked from the waist down. Yes, at 4:25 a.m. last Monday morning, cops got a report about a nude female lighting American flags on fire in Bussey, a city of about 60 miles from Des Moines. Officers located the suspect. She had an American flag tied around her head and was not wearing any pants or underwear. After reportedly giving officers a fake name, Laird allegedly resisted arrest and kicked 2 cops. That is not funny. Apparently, the flags were taken and damaged. They belonged to the city of Bussey, Iowa. She took them, and she was found also, just to make things a little bit more juicy, found in possession of a bag containing drug paraphernalia. So she lives in Knoxville, Iowa, not Knoxville, Tennessee. She's locked up on $4,000 bond, arraigned today, or the other day, on a host of charges, including arson, assault, indecent exposure, theft, and possession of drug paraphernalia. Officially, a criminal complaint was filed today. Additionally, I should say, with a charge of desecration of a flag. She was already on probation, Miss Laird, for a 2023 marijuana possession conviction, and she was already convicted in 2022 of driving under the influence. She's 21 years old. She's already been convicted twice, now faces a whole series of charges. She's running around at 4 in the morning, nude, burning American flags with drug paraphernalia. Lord help us! This is America's future! Or something like that. I'm sure some of you people will have a way to defend her. No defense on this show. What an absolute disaster that we have to now clean up. 21 years old, walking around in the buff, burning flags. That's nice of her. That's nice of her. I'm sure she didn't mean it. I'm sure it was just an honest mistake. I'm sure she'll plead not guilty. And then we'll have to support her when she's convicted. I'm sure. All right, that's going to do it for us today. Thank you to all the calls, especially on the Mount Rushmore thing. Hope you enjoyed some NBA talk, some LeBron-y talk, some LeBron-Bron talk, and as well Mike Brown talk. And, well, if you're Malik Beasley, sorry, man, you got bigger problems than me. Back tomorrow at 1, one final day before the 4th of July. We'll all be off on Friday. Again, thanks for listening. We're always live and free on the Odyssey app, all over the DMV on the Team 980, and wherever you get your podcasts, including, again, now iHeartRadio and TuneIn, and everywhere in between, Spotify, Amazon, just go for it, baby, on the Team 980. Thanks to AMAC. We'll see you tomorrow at 1.
Thank you. Yeah, you can go sit down, Rooster. Goodbye.